It is time once again for Wonder Pod. We're up to episode 110. Not sure how this show is going to be received this week. We're probably talking about too many things that aren't strictly hardcore rock gaming, but we'll get through it either way. Joining me this week, as always, is Glacinator.
Hello.
Also joining me, as per usual, is John.
Hey, everybody. And as per usual, I'm sipping on a Diet Dr. Pepper.
Did you actually download Dear Esther?
I did, but I didn't get a chance to start it up.
I made it through the three chapters. I was really hoping I was going to be able to cram all through all of them before I came on the show, but I didn't. Oh. But in breaking news, it's an art game I actually like. So the fucking world's ending. I mean, you can just pretty much mark it down on your calendar. It's also available on Mac, Glace. You got about 45 Ooh. Minutes to get it for $4.99.
Oh, well, let me do that right now.
Yeah, as long as you don't drag the show down, go get it, because it's actually I'll talk about it in what I've been playing, but it's actually a pretty good game. You're not going to waste your $5. I avoided that until you said you were getting it, John. That was the final push over the cliff. I'd avoided it all week, because it's like, that looks really cool, but I've already got enough. Yeah, fuck it. I saw you talking about it. I'm like, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, that's fast. I mean, I've seen so many little tidbits about it now, and then the price was right, so I said, screw it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, but I'll get to that in what I've been playing. John, why don't you go first? You still trudging along in Mass Effect?
Yeah, I have been affecting a lot of masses for the third time. It continues to impress. I keep wanting to get back to it more and more. I think the game is really taken off from what was. I'm sorry, I had to repeat myself a little bit from last week, but it certainly seems like the beginning of the game kind of starts out slow and samey, but now it's really taken off to this game that I can't wait to get back to and see where it takes me. Because as I predicted last week, once I finished the Krogan and Turian stuff, I was knee deep in the Asari story, and which was really cool. It was a smaller story than the Krogan and Turian, but very personal all the same. Like, that's kind of the stuff that was so great about Mass Effect 2, was, you know, getting there with the characters and interacting with their personal stories and while you're shooting the hell out of people. So it was pretty cool. I'm not going to go in this. I'm not going to talk about what happened, because I don't want to spoil it for Bruce. But I know last week you were pretty tepid on the idea of picking it up anytime soon. But man, it really gets going good after a while. And I was joking about it at work today with Roger, and we were saying that, you know, I can't wait to play it again, and, you know, I'm putting all this time in just for an ending that I might not even like. So I'm really enjoying it. What can I say? The other game that I played a little bit this week, because my wife Wanda was partly because my wife Wanda was giving me some hard time about games on the PC, and also due to the release of the third part of the series, I played a little bit of the first Max Payne again. On my computer, and it's not enough for me to give much comment on the game, other than, boy, that first bit in the game where you find you find out that your wife and your kid have been grisly murdered, and now you're on the prowl to take down the guys who did it. It has some pretty low down dark places that game takes you right away. It's strange because Max Payne has that weird smirk on his face the entire time, so it's kind of interesting how that kind of contradicts the darkness. But where it's on PC, you know, I'm no secret, I'm a console gamer, and so using the mouse and the keyboard is different. The sensitivity of the I guess I could probably change the sensitivity of the mouse, but the aiming, I find I'm kind of all over the place and trying to get used to the using a mouse, but it's good. I'm sorry I don't have a whole lot to say this week, because I didn't seem to play a whole lot of games this week. But Max Payne, I'm looking forward to getting into it a bit deeper, and because the storyline seems to be pretty good. They have these cool comic book sequences in between the action stuff, where it tells you what's happening, what he's been doing, and those are and the art style on those are pretty kind of comic book noir as well. But I don't have really don't have a whole lot to talk about with it, other than I died a lot because I didn't know, I couldn't control it very well like I probably could with two analog sticks. So for an unfortunate kind of crappy what am I playing, that's about it.
You can, I think you can go into settings and set the mouse sensitivity. And as much as I don't with my 360, or I don't even know if it's possible on a PS2, I never do it with a 360. I never even mess with it. But I do it on every game that I play on PC. I always change the mouse sensitivity. And especially shooters. And I tend to change it every time I get a new mouse. I notice that it's different from mouse to mouse. I'm still using non-gaming wireless like Logitech mice, so it's nothing super fancy, but I do mess with it. And I do still calibrate my mice from time to mouse from time to time. That last bit may be going a bit overboard, but... I don't know if you recall the days when calibrating a mouse was actually something you really needed to do if you wanted to play video games.
I've got a Logitech wired gaming mouse that I bought, a few years ago, holding in my hand now. I don't see the model number or anything, but it's an MX518.
Yeah, I'm using its wireless equivalent, the MX510. I finally went to wireless about a year ago, and I thought, okay, this is going to last one mouse, and then I'll go back to wired. And now I don't like wired shit anymore. I have the Logitech keyboard equivalent too. And I'm not, I thought about actually finally breaking down and spending the $60-$70 to get a Razer mouse from, because they're actually, specifically built for gaming, but there's a wire and I fucking hate them. I got enough wires behind my desk as it is with all the gaming consoles and other shit in here. So I've kind of become anti-wire, but I think a wired mouse at times is better for PC gaming. I really do. Maybe I'm crazy. No, there's no doubt I'm crazy, but maybe on this issue I'm crazy. But at times I've noticed that the wireless mouse is not as crisp as my wired ones used to be. And I've used Logitech for years. There's definitely better options out there for gaming, but you're getting into the, $70 to $150 and up price range. I've heard a lot of people say good things about Razer, so I'm really still kind of going, well, maybe I'd go back to dealing with wired. Maybe. So.
Yeah. To be fairly honest, when I do my browsing at the EB Games stores and Walmart and such, I keep an eye out just to see if there's going to be a sale on a wired Xbox controller, hoping that it might work with some of the games. I know that's what Patrick does. I think he has a.
I think he ended up getting a Logitech. I don't know if he ever finally bit the bullet and got a wired 360 controller. We could actually ask him that. He was using the I think he bought the Logitech PS2 style ones that I've still got one over here in the drawer. I just never use it. I've thought about it. There's some games I've thought about. As a matter of fact, Dear Esther, that we were talking about a minute ago, it's got settings for a controller.
Okay.
And I don't think it's gone to consoles that I know of.
No, it's not on console.
I didn't think so.
Anyway.
Yeah. But I'm not sure console gamers would. Yeah. I'm not sure there's going to be enough crossover there. There might not be enough action. Glacinator, are you now currently downloading Dear Esther?
It says it's $10, not $5.
Ooh.
Oh, it's over.
It's over. Oh, wait a minute. I thought it said 6 p.m. Pacific. Oh, that sucks. I thought it said 6 p.m. Pacific. Maybe they screwed you back east, guys. Yeah, it was $5.
Oh, well.
Now, if you see it on sale.
Yeah, I'll pick it up if I see it on sale.
Because it's for Mac.
I know.
That was part
There's like
of the
five things for Mac.
That was part of the reason they had it on sale, because they made a copy for Mac. At least that's what the banner said. Didn't the banner say something about that, John? Now for Mac, so at a low introductory price or something like that.
Yeah, it was a deal. Yeah,
the two PC guys got it, and the Mac guy didn't. I think there's something wrong with that. Yeah, exactly.
Dang it.
Yeah, exactly. What have you been playing this week, Glaze?
Now that I'm back home, I've been online a lot. So just to recap the things I usually talk about, I played a lot of Halo Reach, which I haven't gotten my hands on in a while, multiplayer with my brothers. And I've been playing a lot of Battlefield 3 with my brothers and some of my other friends. And like we said before, Battlefield 3, if you have even one other person on your team that you're talking to, you will win the match. It doesn't matter how good everyone else is on the other team individually. As long as if you have a collective group, you will beat everyone. So we've been steamrolling people, and that has led to some bans from some servers, but stuff happens, whatever. I'm not furiously mad. I'm just frustrated. The other game that I got this week, I actually saw it in the Game Informer that I got, and that is Fez, which is an Xbox Live arcade game. Game Informer gave it a 9.5. They said it was really interesting. And I'll try to explain the concept to you, but it's very visual, so I don't know if you'll be able to understand it. We're going to do some math here. All right. So imagine your normal XY coordinate plane. You know, you have dots on it and there's a grid system and there's no Z, meaning there's no distance, there's no depth. So you can't see how close or how far away something is. And an XY coordinate plane is what most 2D platformers are on, like Mario and everything. You'd have no idea how far away the question mark blocks and the coins are. You just take that they're on the same plane because it doesn't matter if there's depth or not. But what Fez does is it takes that 2D platformer, and if you press the left trigger or the right trigger, it respectively rotates the whole world on the Z axis. So if you were playing Mario and you press the right trigger, the whole world would flip like to the right, and you'd be seeing just like a single block because Mario is a straight line, and all the blocks would be over that one block. So the game uses this rotation mechanic to you like climb up towers and jump over platforms, and stuff that you that may appear to be far away on one plane, when you rotate it 180 degrees or 90 degrees, it may appear to actually be right next to you. And so you kind of have to figure out, do I want to rotate this way or this way, and what jump do I have to do in this, in which direction. And it's just, it's really smart. I really like games like this that sort of have like some strange mechanic, like a VVVV, which Bruce hated, but you press the space bar and it goes up and down. This, you just press left and right and it twists left and right. It looks 8-bit. It's 8-bit. Is it 8-bit or 16-bit? I don't know. But it's made to look old school. They have cool 8-bit music, chip tunes, which is really nice to listen to. The game is very relaxing. You don't really die. Like, there's nothing that attacks you, but you can fall down and hurt yourself, but you just respawn back where you fell off. So there's not any frustrating platforming. It's just sort of figuring out which way to turn stuff. The game can be confusing sometimes because in every level or every stage, there's a door you can go in, and that leads to another stage. And then that stage has a door in it, and then you keep going in these doors. And you don't even remember where the heck you went in the first door, but you have to figure out how to get back. So you can get lost in these sort of different worlds. So if you're looking for a game that is sort of unique to it, just a relaxing game, then I would definitely suggest it. I'm not sure if it's worth $10, but I'm having a good time with it. So that's what I've been playing.
So it's it's kind of like And Yet It Moves in 2D.
And Yet It Moves, it rotates on that 2D plane.
Well, that's true.
It rotates on the Z plane.
He did a pretty good job explaining that, didn't he, John?
he did much better than I tried to, man.
I wasn't going to throw you under the bus, but and you did an excellent job too in the respect of explaining the way it was flipping, but the Z-axis thing I would have never thought of, and I can't stand math. speaking of which, he also brought up the two games, or one of the two games I'm never going to live down as hating, even though I didn't Yeah, VVV. Unlike Animal Crossing, VVV I do hate. I just it just never was. It was not meant for me.
I mean, compared to VVV, though, this looks a lot nicer. Like, it doesn't have, like, the weird happy face man and flashing neon colors that give you seizures or anything.
See,
Yeah.
that was the difficulty of VVVV vagina was not my problem. It was the turquoise blue. It was like a Navajo trading post. It exploded in 8-bit format, and it didn't give me a seizure. It was just not making me not want to play it. I mean, I like the innovation of the flipping up and flipping down and a jet. Oh shit, not Jetpack Joyride. Damn it, I have a mobile game that's kind of similar to it, or swipe that kind of
Oh,
mechanic.
Gravity Guy.
Yeah, maybe. But Jetpack Joyride has a suit that does the same thing. You can flip up and you can flip down. So VVV had some stuff that was good about it. I just could not get past the vomit-esque like colors. I think was my biggest problem with it. You guys both, I guess I'm spending 10 more bucks, because Fez sounds, I like the concept. It's going to be another one of those games like Super Meat Boy that I doubt I'll ever finish. But
Hey man, just get the demo and give it a shot.
that's true. There is demos. I will have to maybe play a
The
demo.
demo really doesn't do it justice, though. I mean, it explains what the mechanic is, but it's only like 5 minutes and it doesn't really have any good platforming in it.
Yeah, that's kind of the.
But if you just want to see it visually, then
That's
download
kind of
it.
the downside to some of these newer concept games, you know, where you're actually using a different mechanic. I understand from a financial perspective why you don't want to give away too much in your demo, but maybe demos need to be a little longer with games that are showing off new mechanics, just simply so that people understand what makes them unique. You know, because I've seen screenshots, really high quality screenshots of Fez, and you know, it's like, well, okay. It's like Braid. It's like, you know, Super Meat Boy. It's like all these others until you start reading about the mechanics. I'm giving you an A plus, Glace. Even in a couple of the reviews I read for Fez, they were having a hard time explaining how. But it's not. The problem is, and that's why I think you both did a good job with it. It's not a mechanic that you can explain verbally. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Listening to you both and having a vague understanding of how it works. I watched one video of it a while back. It's not an easy mechanic to explain verbally. So, as Gleisner said, you guys, I'm going to check out the demo now. You guys should check out the demo. As to what I've been playing, I'm kind of like John, not a heck of a lot this week. It was bargain bin shopping at, well, if you count Avatar Golf, the only sports game I allow myself to play anymore because I'm too fucking competitive with everything else. I'm kind of like John. I was bargain basement shopping at Steam. Well, okay, Mass Effect 3 is not bargain basement, but I didn't have a hell of a lot to play. That's what I'm trying to mumble through here. So I picked up Tropico 3 because it was on sale because they're trying to get you to buy Tropico 4. I'd heard of these RTSs, but or this RTS series, but I've played so many RTS games over the years, I just was like, eh, no. I never got into it. Kind of like Max Payne, too. Same thing. Like, eh. It's just one that kind of went by the wayside for me. I like it. It has somewhat of a Civilization vibe for me, but I like the idea of running a little island. And you really have to pay attention to the happiness of all different groups of people that live on said island. You know, you have your goals of doing X. Like, I think the first level is you have to ship 8,000 tons of agriculture products. But at the same time, while you're trying to concentrate on doing that, you have to keep everybody happy, or otherwise it doesn't happen. It's still definitely, you know, cut and dried RTS. There's no two ways about it. But the little added mechanics of seriously having to be diplomatic. You know, I mean, you kind of have to be diplomatic in Civilization too, but not really. I mean, you can work around it. So it's been interesting. I gave it a break. I played my brains out on it over the weekend, and I kind of gave it a break, mostly because I picked up Dear Esther. Now, I'd been avoiding this now closed, apparently, $4.99 sale most of the week until I saw John talking about it on Twitter earlier, and I thought, you know, fuck it. It's only $5. So I picked it up. It's a really interesting game. It's basically you're walking through a story. You're walking through this guy's story or delusion. It kind of depends on how you view it. And I'm trying not to say too much to if there's any way possible to spoil this game. It's really simple to do. There's no action key. You just move around through this island. The art is extremely beautiful. It's obviously meant more as an art game like Flower or... John, what's that one you were playing on PSN with a...
Journey.
Thank you. Jawa Dudes. I was trying to say Jawa Dudes, and I couldn't remember that either. Something along the lines of Journey, except it doesn't screw you like the one where you're not supposed to walk on the path, and I really need to look up the name of that game so I can make proper fun of it one of these days. My lowbrow hillbilly brain might not be best to compute all the art aesthetics in it, but it's really gorgeous. In fact, I've took a couple screenshots, one of which I'm going to use for the banner for tomorrow for this show. One thing I like about it, and hopefully I can do this without really ruining the game, I like it that it's told in letter form, for one thing, obviously by the title, Dear Esther. But second, too, the way this character talks, it's an interesting take on the finality of things and on knowing that your path is made for you, that the die is cast, to get even more ridiculous about it, but that you're comfortable with it, that you've made peace with it. And it's playing it, and there's 4 chapters total. I've made it through 3. I really want to go back and play them a little slower. I was trying to do these chapters so that I could talk about it tonight on the show. It almost feels like a retrospective. To put it another goofy way, like you're looking through somebody's photo album. You get hints and clues and ideas of what has taken place to the gentleman writing the letters, but you really never... But it also gives you plenty of freedom to add your own nuances to the experience, to figure out for yourself what is exactly going on, which isn't always a good thing for me, because then I start to stray into like making jokes, you know, and my brain starts doing things like earlier I was like, Dear Esther, chapter 1 was a real shit fest. I really hope I don't have to go back to chapter 1 for anything. You know, I mean, but I like games like that. I like games that allow my mind to just wander. If you like traditional video games, you don't like to be challenged mentally, I probably wouldn't recommend this game. But if you want a game that doesn't ask much of you, that just gives you an experience, says, here you go, take it away, have fun with it, then Dear Esther is probably worth $10, which it's back to now, or if you see it on sale for Steam at $5, as we were talking about here a few minutes ago, you know, it's for both Mac and PC. I kind of wish they had more demos on Steam, to be honest. It would be a good one for somebody to demo if you're not 100% sure it's for you. But in a chunk of time for me where I'm kind of feeling burnt out and not as enthusiastic about a lot of games, it was kind of just what the doctor ordered. You know, normally I mention John when I buy things so I can later blame him for it. But in this case, hey, I believe in full disclosure, if I'm going to throw you under the bus at some point in the future, I'm going to let you know about it. But in this case, it was more of, yeah, exactly. It was more of, you know that game's something you want to try. Quit being such a cheap ass and buy it. You know, because like you were, I saw you on your tweet, John, you had the hashtag pile of shame. And that was kind of the battle I was having. It's like, it's going to go into the pile of shame, or is it really, you know, and I went, piss on it. Trust me, if you roar through it, it's not going on the pile of shame. It's not going to take you long to beat it. Like I said, I hope you play it this week or this weekend, go leading into next week's show, so that we could talk about it a little bit, because I'll be curious to see what you think of it.
Yeah, I'll definitely play it. I mean, especially if it's short. I mean, it's a good chance, something just to, you know, whisk a few, way a bit of time on.
Yeah, it's like I said. Once I realized I had X amount of time between the time I got home from work and the time that, you know, I wanted to do a little prep for the show and get ready to do the show and then actually do this, I knew I was kind of thinking I wouldn't have enough time to get through it if I actually took a lot of time. I don't think there's a ton of visual cues and other things I missed, because part of the mechanic is the guy starts speaking, and it's in, like I said, letter form for the most part. And then of course there's, you know, the what he's saying scrolled on the, or, you know, up on the screen as well. So you kind of have cues when you should be looking for things or, you know, I noticed that I think they have a pace in mind for you,
mm-hmm.
because I noticed I saw one particular set of visual cues, went, okay, that sort of makes sense given what the story's given me so far. I got maybe a minute and a half past that set of cues, or past that set of objects, and then he starts talking about it. And now, I don't know whether that was intended to talk about it in retrospect or to talk about it because I got there too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, the way you describe it, it sounds a bit like that game Flower, which is the same people who did Journey. And in Flower, you know, it's a first-person game, but you're just the wind blowing through these beautiful environments, and there's no story really other than you're awakening the land. But like you say, like, there's a pace they want you to take, and just flowing through and a relaxing ride, you know, through the land, right? It sounds kind of like that.
Well, the third chapter, I'm definitely going to go back and spend some time with, because the art, and that's almost Glace where it's worth you paying $10 for, because the art in the third chapter, even I'm dullard that I may be, was like, whoa, that's, and there's some stuff I'm not giving away that adds to that art, but I'm not going to tell you what that is. It's kind of a hilarious contrast, actually. And no, it's not body fluids. That really adds to it, but it's like I said, I'm definitely going to play through it again, probably tomorrow evening or whatever, you know, as soon as the show's done and my week's done, at a slower pace. I'll probably finish it up because I've made it to the last chapter, but like I said, yeah, it's something that, at least for me, I need to do every once in a while, you know, kind of take a break from the same old, same old. So, and that's what I've been playing. Let's move on to our discussion topic. Our discussion topic may not be a long one, and that's fine, because there's some stuff in the other segments that I'd really like to get to and may take a while if we do it all, but they need to be done. Diablo 3 released this week, as you know. Those of you that have listened to the show for a long time may know, I'm a huge Blizzard fan. I own everything pre-World of Warcraft that they've ever made on CD and DVD, as well as digital to a certain extent. And when StarCraft II came out, that it was too long. And I was not a huge StarCraft nut the first time around. But when Diablo III was first announced or leaked, or however you want to put it, they had me mildly interested. And then, as I said, Twitter, Facebook, I don't remember where, Blizzard's attitude of, we're taking our time to make this game, wink, wink, say no more, really struck me as complete bullshit, that they were more likely swimming naked in a tower full of money that World of Warcraft was making them. Now, while I can't really blame them for that, it just lessened and lessened my love for Diablo and the wait for it. Not to mention the fact that when you release a action RPG that has the multiplayer aspects that Diablo 2 did, for me, there's really no point in getting on launch day. And if you saw, ladies and gentlemen, any of the news this week, haven't heard about lawsuits yet. I'm still waiting for that, and I'm sure it's going to come. I intend to pick up the game at some point, but it may be a few more days, if not a couple weeks. Which led me to thinking about launches in general. Midnight launches, MMO launches, big long wait games like this Diablo game. I'm getting to the point where I don't care. I'm going to get, for the most part, the same experience whether I buy it a week later, 10 days later, that I would if I bought it on launch day and was a meat shield for the rest of the humanity. And on top of that, selfishly, I think I was a meat shield going through all the bugs and patches and bullshit with Diablo 2 enough that somebody else could take my stead. To wrap up that long and involved ramblings thing is, I will start with you, Glace. Do you, given all of that, and given how we've seen this time and time again, Battlefield 3 was the same, Halo Reach to a certain extent was the same, do you still care about launch day, or are you comfortable with waiting a little bit to avoid the mess?
I hate to always bring this up, but it really depends on whether or not, if it's a multiplayer online game, which is usually the case. If it's online, usually it's when I want to be on launch day. If it's a single player game, usually I'm not like, I have to run and get this. I can wait for a single player game. But it really depends on where I am. If I'm in no internet land, then no, it does not matter. But if I'm back home, then yeah, it does.
So you feel like you need the even start with everybody when we're playing something like Battlefield or Halo?
Not necessarily that I want to get a head start or anything. It's just that it feels more like you're part of it. I know that sounds sort of lame, but it's, you know, it's fun. If you can get on a server and there's like a million people playing at the same time, everyone's like, oh, and everyone's all level one and it doesn't matter, you know? So, I mean, I guess it is sort of an even playing field that I like, but it's just being part of the moment.
I understand that, and that's actually a great way to describe it, being part of the moment. And I think that's, I don't know whether it's I've outgrown it or I'm just getting too much old man get off my lawn, but I'm not as concerned, personally, I'm not as concerned about being in the moment anymore. And what kind of led me to that, you remember the, you remember the 11 puppies stab wouldn't shut up spectacular the last time we all played Battlefield 3 as a group?
Yeah.
I noticed that I was like one of the lowest ranked guys in there. And it used to be I felt like, you know, I was behind, especially like in the original Modern Warfare. I didn't feel that way. I felt like I had just as good a chance of racking up hits and, you know, kills and flag caps as I would have if I'd been playing it constant for the last 6 months. Now, Battlefield's a little different. You know, Halo, maybe, you or COD, you need to, you know, keep up with your level ups and all that stuff. But that's a great way to describe it, though, Glace. I think that's it for me, is I'm just not concerned about being in the moment. The game will be there a week later. You know, it's time for your generation to be the meat shield and work through the bugs and glitches. Maybe that's what I'm saying. John, as somebody who's closer to my generation than the Glacinators, or my age, let's put it that way, it's not really a generation, are you as concerned about launch day items as we go forward, or are you okay with waiting a little too?
Well, personally, I really haven't been into the launch, launch day thing for quite a while. I mean, I've had so many games that came out. I'll just give an example, like let's try Rock Band 2. I remember not Rock Band 2. Gears 2 came out, I think it was, and I was really hyped to get it and play it, and not even so much for the multiplayer. I just wanted to play the next one. I was, you know, geared up, if you will, for it. And so I remember that the day it was coming out, I was working night shift the night before, where I used to work at the refinery, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to get home in time to get a copy because it'll all be bought up on launch day and midnight releases, blah, 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 blah. But then as soon as I got home, whatever day it was, I just drove right on past EB Games, drove up to the Walmart, walked in, got a copy, walked out the door, went home, and people were still out waiting waiting in the cold or whatever it was that day, and I just drove on home, my copy of the game, and came home and played it. And after a couple of experiences like that, I just stopped caring about getting it the first moment possible. As far as what Clay said, I do agree. If it was a multiplayer game that I was waiting for, and really wanted and something new for sure, where everybody was on the same learning curve, I think I would want to be there early as possible so that the even playing field is there. Because one of the reasons why I probably don't get into many multiplayer games now is that it's just like diving into the deep end with all the experienced swimmers, because I'm just, I can't figure out where's my opportunity to learn and get some time to do so. At least with everybody else is struggling to swim, that we can all, learn together. And yeah, the launch game thing, the launch day thing, I'm sorry, it really doesn't do a whole lot for me anymore.
Quick anecdote. Halo Reach, when it came out, Pat was off being chased by grizzly bears that his wife was whatever story we made up at the time. He was in the mountains of British Columbia on vacation. And so I was waffling about getting it. I didn't know Glacinator as well. Of course, you gotta factor in the Carlos factor. And I'm not a Halo fan, so I kind of was waffling on it. And it was launch day, and I was at Walmart for some other reason, or going to that area. There's a Walmart and a GameStop, and I walked into GameStop and I just asked them. It was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, after day after midnight launch. Got any copies left of Halo Reach? Yep, got like three. All right, I'll take one. And I've walked out of there, no hassle, no nothing. I went home and I played the single player. I think I played the single player until Pat got back from vacation, then I finally went into the multiplayer.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like, if you think that there won't be copies of the biggest game of the year, it's somewhere that you can't for you to find. You're just kidding yourself and getting caught up in the hype, which is fun too. It can really be fun to get caught up in the hype, but you'll find a copy.
Oh yeah, the aforementioned Carlos. Oh dude, you're not gonna get a copy for a week if you don't pre-order it. Halo this, Halo that. I don't live on a rinky-dink.
Pre-orders.
I don't live on a rinky-dink fucking island. I've got like
and
a
you don't
sick.
live in a college town with two GameStops. That's the worst.
Yeah, I've got, let's see, within 30-minute drive either direction, I've got probably four GameStops and six Walmarts. I think I can find a copy depending on how motivated I am to go find it.
Within 20 minutes, and I live in St. John's. I'm sure at least three EB Games. There's a Future Shop, a Best Buy, two Walmarts, and they sell games at drugstores now around here.
That's what
That's
Pat said too in Calgary. Yeah, my crack wasn't at islands. My crack was at Puerto Rico specifically. Just because I
Well,
like irritating Carlos.
the supermarket down the road has an electronic section. They get games in on launch day. Like, it's not hard to get a game.
That's what Glacinator can correct me for his region of the country if I'm incorrect. That's the one thing I noticed in both in St. John's and Calgary and in Ontario area where I've got another friend. There's more drug stores and grocery stores carrying a select section of electronics, and I don't, at least here in California, don't see that, which is good for you guys, is what I'm basically saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm getting off track here, but the drugstores around here, the ones that they're opening these big pseudo box stores, trying to be the all-in-one, so they'll have a small electronics section, but they'll also have a small grocery section, a small, I mean, drugstores often have like the makeup and all that kind of jazz and confectionery stuff, but they're trying to get into a little bit of everything.
Well, down here in the South, and especially in South Louisiana, more than anywhere else, besides the Walmarts, most grocery stores and drug stores are all like home-owned. Like, there's no real chains down here.
You got a very good point. I didn't think about that because it was the same way in Auburn too, over in middle Alabama. Yeah, Glace is right. There's not as many chain. I mean, we have the like wall. We have like the Walgreens and CVS and all that fun shit. This is a town of about 15,000 where I live, and we have like 27 drugstores. I mean, it's like Jesus Christ, is everybody dying? I mean, but that's kind of the thing. There's one on every corner. But Glace brought up a point that I'd completely forgotten about. But in Auburn, the college town I lived in, there was I think one CVS or something like that. But a lot of them, yeah, were mom and pop shops. You know, John, the funny thing is I wonder if it's because I consistently played so many FPSs over the year. I don't feel like I'm ever behind. So many of
Oh,
the mechanics.
go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to say it's an experience thing.
Well, so many of the mechanics. Well, I liked your analogy. I really liked your analogy of, you know, just being thrown in the deep end. And I have had that feeling one or two times. But for the most part, most FPSs anymore, whether they're console or PC, are pretty much the same mechanics. You're pretty much going to deal with the same garbage, you know, from people who don't want to play the game correctly, or for that game type. So it's really getting accustomed to the specific weapons and maps. So I've never felt like I've been behind, but I see where you're coming from. I'm wondering if that's because I play more and you play less, or is it just person, you know, each person is different kind of thing.
I bought Left 4 Dead the first one pretty early on when it came out, and thinking it was a great idea, you know, the team-based cooperative play, you know, and I felt fine in that because everybody was learning the maps as much as I was, and but then when Left 4 Dead 2 came out, I rented it one day and then, you know, kind of left it alone for a while, saying, "Oh, I'll buy that later," but I never did because. Because I felt like everybody already knew the game inside out, and I mean, with those games, you know, when you play the map, you know, a bunch of times, there aren't more maps.
Yeah, I was WonderPod Online really hadn't, or the crew that eventually formed it hadn't really got rolling when the original Left 4 Dead came out. I ran with a crew of Destructoid community members in it. We pretty much roll you. I mean, it was like 10 or 12 guys strong that would play every night. And I still sucked with the hunter, but most everything else, we pretty much roll you. I mean, it got to the point where it was getting pretty boring. What we ended up doing after a while was we'd get a party. That's eight people, so four on four, you got the versus, and we would stay in the party where we were playing, so that the infected people could talk to the survivors and vice versa. And I mean, you want to talk about fun trash talking. Some of the most, I mean, I've had always had a blast with the WonderPod Online crew too, but some of the most fun trash talking and just making you mess up, you know, trying to like talking to you like they're actually a survivor, not remembering whose voice is whose, and you know, and getting screwed sideways because of it. It was a riot. But if I'd gone into that game late, and we actually had a couple people that came in later and started playing with us, yeah, that specific game or games is definitely one you needed to kind of be there earlier. You were gonna get rolled. It's the only time I saw Carlos behave. I think he was deathly afraid those people were going to do evil things to him if he acted like Carlos. He jumped on in Left 4 Dead 2. He jumped on in a versus match I was in with those guys. They were a couple players short. No, I did not invite him. He just jumped in there because, you know, you can see what your friends are doing. Most well-behaved I ever saw him in Left 4 Dead 2. So, okay, that's been our discussion topic. Let's move on to Audio Master G. I think Audio Master G has a friend with him this week, and I also think we're doing some Wonderstalgia in more ways than one. Take it away, Audio Master G.
Hey, WonderPod episode 109, Audio Master G here. Hey, yo, Chico, or should I say, the bad guy. Since this is audio only, you can't see me flicking this toothpick at you. It's an invasion, folks, and while I'd like to say how's the WPO crew doing, it's a moot sentiment. We're taking over, and I've brought a friend.
Friend? You have a friend? Where did you find a friend?
BoardWrestlingFan.com.
What?
BoardWrestlingFan.com.
What?
BoardWrestlingFan.com. Every week, we deliver reviews of the ongoings of the WWE, TNA, and all things professional wrestling. And each Sunday...
Oh, yeah, that thing.
You know, Superfly Jimmy Snuka was born today, May 18th, in 1943. I don't know what that has to do with video games, but it is worth noting.
Happy birthday, Superfly! Hey, G, didn't you have something you needed to do?
Yeah, I think I need to take my little brother to California. You know, on the way, we'll meet some kid who has a magical item known as a power glove. And later, I'll go back in time and hang out with Winnie Cooper, while my big brother would go on to work with Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan to destroy TNA. Wait, what? Why was I talking about the Wizard? Alright, that's because it helped to introduce one of Nintendo's most epic video games of all time.
You'd be referring, of course, to the one and only Super Mario Bros. 3, which was the game played in the finals of the tournament in The Wizard, which was won by Little Jimmy. Little Jimmy?
On October 23, 1988, the world would delve into the third installment of the beloved Super Mario Bros. Universe. Super Mario 3 returned to its initial roots, elevating the platform experience with a diversity of new suits and abilities. If you haven't heard of this game, it's unlikely you're even listening to this podcast because you've never even heard of video games. Super Mario Bros. 3 remains the highest-grossing non-bundled home video game to date, having grossed over $1.7 billion inflation-adjusted. What do you think really makes this game so epic, since we haven't touched upon already, Joe?
Tanuki suits, hammer suits, frog suits, a world map, warp whistles, and the fact that we find out that Bowser's name is Morton Koopa by way of one of his sons being named Morton Koopa Jr.
Nice. Gotta love the nepotism amongst the baddies, huh? So, WonderPod, we want to hear from you. And this is Wonderstalgia, after all, so I generally try to keep things open. But there's no chance in hell you don't have anything to say about this game. And once in a while, we have to hit the top games of all time. And who better than the best in the world, the BWF, to ask. Hiya, John Kind, how you doing? That's all for us, folks. Remember to check out BoardWrestlingFan.com for all your pro wrestling goodness. Audio Master Ramon out.
Buy the shirt!
The Power Glove. It's so bad. I love that movie when I was a kid. The Wizard was one of those movies that I fell in love with the idea of playing Mario Brothers 3 and like the whole idea of being in a gaming tournament. Yeah, it was like awesome stuff, and that kid, California, was so annoying. But then, you know, you couldn't help but root for him by the end. So he's a definite underdog, but it's one of those movies that's I'm not sure if it holds up very well today. But then again, you know. Nostalgia, Wonderstalgic, I don't know. It's you can't help but love it, right? But Super Mario Bros. 3, I play that thing so often and so much. I'm surprised I haven't got those map screens burned into my old television back in the day. It's one of the all-time classic games. It's really, it's been on so many different platforms. I mean, forget just the NES, but it's on. WiiWare, it's on the Game Boy Advance. They made so much money out of that thing from more releases than just the single Nintendo release. It's not even funny. Mario 3 is one of those games that it's the gameplay is all there. It takes Mario Brothers 1, it expands on it and takes you in so many different directions. Bruce talked about Mario Brothers 2 briefly last week and how it's so different, and it was a dream. It was a dream of Mario. Bruce, was that you last week who talked about that? That was you, right?
No, I don't think so.
What am I thinking? Who am I thinking? Was that another podcast I listened to?
But then again, I can't. Sorry about that. My cord was hung up on my ear. But then again, I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. So I'm.
Yeah, well,
did
anyway.
We talk about Super Mario Bros. 2 last? I don't remember.
We did recently. Anyway, Mario 3 takes Mario 1 and just turns it up on 11, and it's one of my all time favorite games. And when we did our big list, it was definitely up there. So you know, if you haven't played it and you don't love it, I'm sorry, you have missed out on something special. What do you guys think?
Well, John mentioned it, but I've never played Super Mario 3 on the NES. Was it on NES or SNES? I don't know.
NES, yeah.
NES. I've only played it on Game Boy Advance, and it's called Super Mario Advance 4. Why is it called 4? I don't know. Nintendo is very strange with their numbering. But it's definitely one of those games that just sticks with you in terms of how nicely everything is laid out. There's a lot of levels that are just fun to run through, the airship levels and fighting the bosses and everything. But you mentioned in Super Mario 2 how it was all just a dream. But have you ever thought that in Super Mario Brothers 3, it's all just a stage? When you first turn on the game, the curtain comes down with the checkered background, and Mario runs by the stage and runs off. At the end of each level, you run to the right, you know, exit stage right, and like the background goes away. All the blocks in the game are bolted to the background, and all the platforms that are in the air are hanging from what? The ceiling of the theater? Ooh, I don't know. So, something to think about.
Hey, Audio Master G and Joe. Why does that sound like a good title for a Saturday morning kids cartoon show? The G and Joe Show. Maybe not. Maybe it's more adult-oriented. Anyways, the one thing that I do like about Super Mario Bros. 3, it is not my favorite. I'm sorry. My first encounter with the plumbers was in the arcade with Super Mario Bros. So it's always going to be my favorite just for nostalgia reasons. But the one thing I did like about Super Mario Bros. 3 and why it stuck with me is what Glacinator just said. What the hell is this? You know, is it all like bolted together? Is it being, and especially if you're younger, which actually counts for Glace too, because even though it was on the Game Boy Advance, we were probably all roughly the same age when we first played it.
Yep.
You know, so that concept with the whole stage stuff, and again, Glacinator's batting 1,000 tonight. I would never been able to explain it that way myself, but it's exactly how it is, and it's exactly why it is so memorable. For me, I mean, I played it on the NES. My cousin was a huge Nintendo head, so I was always playing, you know, those games with him. The big one for me, though, was the cartoon show that went along with it. I actually really enjoyed that as a kid. And I often wonder if in some ways it didn't not encourage you, but it didn't so much, maybe encourage is the right word, to play the game more. I'm not saying that Nintendo had some subliminal messaging, kid mind-washing shit in their show to make you play the game, but, you know, I think the Mario Brothers franchise, as silly as it may be to say this, it took a step up, you know, in its evolutionary ladder with Super Mario Brothers 3. It's at least how I kind of see it. I mean, that franchise is so long running. And there's so much about each one that's the same because of how they're all, you know, how they're all made. It's not like you just throw out Mario and Luigi and get two new guys every few years. But to me, certain installments of the franchise have moved a step up. After Super Mario Bros. 3, for me, it was probably Super Mario 64. You know, and it's kind of gone from there. Nintendo heads, whichever one. Do you guys kind of see it the same way? That was the first thing that popped into my mind when I was thinking of Super Mario Bros. 3. It's kind of a step up in its evolutionary ladder. Am I nuts?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just to tie it back to the wizard. I mean, it had so many little things, like the whole idea of secret pathways and alternate routes and stuff. That I mean, the Mario Brothers franchise started a bit of that, even in the first one with some of the warp zone stuff. But 3 brought it on even more with the warp whistles and those white blocks that you could pass through and just making you think about these platforming levels in different ways, other than simply going from left to right, and you know how you get around them in terms of you know it Mario 3 brought in more items, more like with the tail and all that stuff. Just it was just so it. As you say, it evolved the idea of what you could do with a simple platformer.
Glace, feel the same way, or what's your take there on that, on what I was mumbling about?
Well, Rank 3 guys are coming from, I never really saw it that way, mostly because I was playing the game in retrospect. I didn't play like 1, 2, 3, and then 64. My first Mario game was 64.
Ah.
And then I went back and played the other ones.
So 64 is always going to hold a special place for you like the arcade does for me because it was your first experience into it. And 64 happened to be really innovative again as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's, you know, as much as we talk about worn out franchises or franchises that need to die, like Audio Master G asked us about. God damn it, I almost said axed. Jesus, it's all going to hell. A couple weeks ago, Super Mario is just one of those ones that you're going to play them. it's going to happen. The saga continues. Really appreciate you guys asking us a question. Looking forward to where this goes from here, and we'll see you guys next week. Let's move on. I was going to ignore the topic we're about to discuss, which involved news stories of some sort, but really isn't what I'm going to talk about or ask these guys about. Even though Glacinator was, as he said, frustrated, probably a little angry about it, the Battlefield 3 server, rent server, you know, dedicated normal servers disappearing issue just really kind of went over my head until this extremely loud chorus using this issue as a battering ram to hammer EA some more, which, you know, is now popular and trendy because they won some rigged poll where 95% of the people that voted in it probably have never even been harmed in the slightest by EA. Thank you, consumerist. And they felt like they were painting with too broad a brush. In fact, to reuse a joke that I played on these guys before the show, it felt more like they were painting with a crop duster. And even more annoying, the chorus was joined by gaming pundits and journalists who are smarter than that and should not have been lumping this all into one issue because it's not a single focus issue. I understand that the concept of renting servers in on consoles, where especially in the case of the 360, you pay for the service, is probably a somewhat disruptive and abrupt concept. The problem is the Torch and Pitchfork crowd, which loves to claim that PC gaming is free and finds it acceptable to rent servers on PC, tends to forget that you do have to pay an internet bill with PC gaming. Yeah, you know, if you're not paying the internet bill, which it is a cost, you're not going to be gaming on jack shit at all, first off. You know, and so To a certain extent, it caught me off guard that people were having a shit fit about this because I'm a longtime PC gamer. I'm used to this concept. I'm used to a lot of the problems that you've heard Glacinator talk about. And when you take it and when you combine that with people just using this to hammer EA because it's in and it's trendy and it's the thing to do, even though, as I've stated before and will continue to state, all AAA publishers for the most part are assholes. I thought we'd better break this issue down a little more than I've seen it done anywhere else. First question, John, and I'm going to ask you this because you're, you know, not the non-hardcore shooter fan like Glace and I. By itself, with none of the other orbiting moon-like issues that have gone along with this mess, does renting servers for private play or for gamer use as they see fit on consoles bother you in any way, shape, or form?
Not really. I mean, it's not I mean, sure, and the average Joe is not seeing the servers that they want to use, but if someone is paying for them, I mean, they have every right to do that, in my opinion.
So, okay, I'm going to ask you this. I got to skip down on my cheat sheet here. Do you see it this function as a bonus to them, even given that EA's dumbass CEO who needs to learn how to shut his mouth has said that things like Project $10 is paying for servers? Or is this something that isn't a bonus or is egregious and evil?
I think it's just another option that they're giving people. It's another avenue to make money. Sure it is, but it's kind of giving more the ability to customize and make it yours, which is appealing. I'm sure it would be appealing to some people. You're talking about how great it is to play with your friends if you can pitch in and have your pay your amount of money and everybody gets to always be on the same server and always be your friends. It might not be that's not so much a bad thing. I don't play those kinds of things very often. I'm kind of talking out of my ass a little bit, but it doesn't seem to be that bad of a thing.
That was my first thought when the pitchfork and torch and crop duster crowd started. It's like, you mean I could rent a server where only like me and 8 or 10 of my buddies could play? And I don't have to deal with the Tickle Me Elmo, the little kids that sound like Tickle Me Elmos in a cement truck. I don't have to deal, it's like, Now to the Paul Harvey, the rest of the story, our listeners are going, who? And maybe the cast. Glacinator by itself, none of the other issues, including the secondary question I asked John, do you have an issue with them renting servers on consoles?
All right, here's the deal. I'm going to lay it down. EA can do whatever it wants. It's game. It's Battlefield's its game, okay? If someone buys a server and they enforce rules on it, they have every right to kick me for whatever reason because it's their server. I'm not saying that that's saying anything good about their character. I'm just saying they have the right to do it. But also, EA, Battlefield 3, blah, blah, blah. Because I bought your game, I want to play on an online multiplayer experience brought to me by EA. I don't want a multiplayer experience that is hosted by some kid in freaking middle of nowhere, Georgia, who only wants to play with shotguns and kicks me off. I want to play a Battlefield 3 game where it's just normal. You have a right to give me a game that is normal because you have an online experience that is about playing Battlefield 3. Most of these servers that you're creating, or not you're creating, but most of these servers that are out now are not even Battlefield 3 servers anymore. They're just they're shadows of their foreign selves, and they have the right to do that. But you also have the right to provide me, a gamer that just wants to play a game, normal Battlefield 3 game, a normal server. So there's no reason why you should be getting rid of all your servers. You say you're bringing them back, I don't see them. That's okay. My problem.
Okay, you went a little too far.
I'm sorry.
I knew it was
more than frustrated.
I could have cut you off sooner and done it, the way I intended, and I wasn't going to because that was a good rant. That's the thing. And that's where it comes down to me, where you do have the egregious and evil aspect. In that if they're pulling, air quotes, people, dedicated servers to normal gameplay, to just run-of-the-mill deathmatch, conquest, rush, squad deathmatch, then that is evil. That is a reason to give EA flack, an actual legitimate one. Now, I'm going to ask you this, Glacinator. Do you think they're actually pulling them to save themselves money, or do you think people are just renting them up faster than they can provide normal ones? Now, I'll give you an example to kind of give you what I'm thinking. Back in the day, normal PC setting, whether you were using GameSpy, Arcade, or whatever other third-party garbage you had to deal with, there was usually like maybe four normal servers, and then a two dozen rented servers. Excuse me, sorry. And then probably God knows how many servers people were running themselves, you know, were had bought and paid for and all that fun stuff. So I just wanted to give you some perspective on how it ran on PC. You may still think the same thing. I wanted to throw it out there. So anyway, do you think they're pulling them, or do you think they're just getting rented up too fast?
I think they're getting rented up too fast. But that isn't to say that there isn't a place for both types of servers. I mean, you can do whatever you want if you buy a server. But I should still be allowed to do whatever I want on a normal server because I paid for having a normal server.
Right. And where EA has made a mistake, I'm not entirely sure how evil that mistake is. You know, perception is everything. Facts are nothing. And God damn it, it seems like it's getting worse and worse with that concept in gaming. In general, I don't gaming blogs, gamers' views, forums, you know. So EA is going to take a beating. And again, I'm not saying they don't deserve it. God knows they say enough stupid shit themselves to deserve it. That they really made a mistake in that they should have kept the dedicated pool for normal matches. That was dumb. And that, if you want to call it evil to make yourself feel better and all trendy and cool, fine. I don't care. But that's really where they screwed the pooch. You know, because, like I said, you just want to play. When you're playing with your friends from college or your brothers, what's the game type you guys normally play? I know we normally play Conquest because that's what us old farts like to play.
We usually play a combination of Rush and Conquest. Maybe some Team Deathmatch, but not that much.
Yeah, I never could get into Deathmatch with Battlefield. If I want shoot 'em up, bang bang battle Deathmatch, I'll go play Tribes Ascend or Halo Reach. John, do you think they're pulling them to be evil? Or do you think they're just getting rented up too fast?
Too fast.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, why cut yourself short? Or, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. It's just getting chewed up too fast.
Again, for those of you that are part of the mob I made fun of at the opener to this story, I don't care. If you want to bash on them, if you want to be all trendy and cool, and I notice it's gotten way worse since that consumerist joke of a poll. But at the same time, too, I'm not convinced, and it's obvious my castmates share that thought, that this is necessarily as an intentional and as evil as some people would love to claim it is. Let me ask you one other thing on this. maybe. Sorry, lost in my notes. Oh, that's it. Glacinator, starting with you. Do we take for granted or place too little value on how much it costs to actually run these servers for massive games like COD, Halo, Battlefield, MMOs? Are we being a little too picky, I guess, is my question.
We might be. I know we always have complaints, and what we have to remember is, this might be sort of specific, but how well Bungie actually did it compared to every other multiplayer experience out there. I've never had a problem with Bungie servers. And God knows how much money they put into that to get their servers running. I didn't play Homefront, but I know you guys had a lot of problems with that. So you do have to think about how much it does cost to have an online experience. But at the same time, you're paying to get that. So I think you do have room to complain if something isn't going your way.
Right. No. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because you're absolutely right. As much as I sit in the camp of, I think gamers complain too quick and too much sometimes. No, don't anybody get me wrong. I have no issue with people complaining when they don't think their online experience is acceptable. I just, was curious whether we take how much work and how much cost is actually into making that experience happen at all for granted, I guess. John, same question, basically.
Yeah, I would say people do take it for granted. It's such an it's something that just goes unseen and unheard. I mean, it's I want my game to work right away. All these things going on with Diablo 3 lately with the servers and such, that would just drive me up the wall if I couldn't play my game the way I wanted to. But as far as the EA example, if I felt if I really wasn't getting what I felt I paid for, I probably would complain. But it's definitely because you don't know how much work it takes or whatever it might be.
Oh, and I'm not excusing them. Again, I want to make this absolutely clear. I'm not excusing anybody in this. I'm not taking a side. Basically, is what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to give a different perspective. And just ask questions I hear nobody else asking. Yes, the home front example is perfect, Glazenator. And what made that more maddening? If it had been like Lost Planet 3 demo, the multiplayer demo, where the game was kind of and it's like, I've seen this before, I've played this before, just meh about it. Then the Lost Planet 3 demo, so the Lost Planet 3 demo wasn't as maddening an experience. What made Homefront so maddening was actually had some new concepts, actually had some pretty interesting gameplay that would have been just awesome to play. Assists were so much more important and things of that nature that it just was so frustrating. And I think, like Glacinator talked about, you still absolutely have a right to bitch when it gets like Homefront or the launches of, any shooter, not just EA's, but Activision's as well. Anybody that's not Bungie. But at the same time, too, I think it's important not to take for granted how bloody difficult it is to keep this whole experience alive. But at the same time, too, there's also something to be said for publishers and gaming companies not preparing well enough. I think that's what the Diablo 3 thing, I think that's what that was, and that's where I'll go back and kind of bitch at Activision Blizzard, because it's like, really? You didn't expect this? And I knew it was coming, John. I knew 3 days, like when you said Roger picked it up, I'm like, oh man, I feel sorry for Roger. I knew 3 days before it launched. Everybody, I kept seeing more and more ads pop up on sites. I was going to hell, there's one right here in the story I'm looking at in my other window. I knew it was coming because it happened during Diablo 2. it was, yeah. I was there for that one, play for like 2 minutes, just get a quest or a job or whatever you want to call it in Diablo, make it 20 feet and you're offline. Oh, what? My ladder ranking disappeared. I actually killed a bunch of noobs last night. My ladder ranking disappeared. Imagine my surprise. It was all that crap. And so, Blizzard's probably going to eventually get my money. I love the Diablo franchise enough that I'm not going to be able to resist it like I did StarCraft 2. But so there you go. A little bit of Diablo, lots about EA and the server mess. If you don't feel the way we do or don't like the fact we're trying to bring perspective and you just like to, continue on with the crop duster and the torch and pitchforks, feel free to contact us and tell us how you feel. We'll even read it on the air if you want. We'll tell you how to do it at the end of the show. Finally, more EA stuff. Aren't you excited? In 2010, I did a lot of work. It's one of the few times you'll actually hear me say I actually did work. hard work in preparing for this show about the former bosses at Infinity Ward versus Activision versus the World lawsuit for the whole Modern Warfare 2 debacle, wrongful termination, so on and so forth. Well, I'm finally, after 2 years, I'm here to give you an update. First off, Activision tried to buy out with like 42 million, or no, more than that, 40-some-odd employees of former employees of Infinity Ward in an attempt to settle other lawsuits that don't pertain to West and Zampella, the former heads of Infinity Ward. On top of that, news came over the wire yesterday that EA and Activision had settled their $400 million... shit, what was it? What the hell was it? Oh, crap, I can't think of the actual word they used. I forget. It was a cool word, so I'm stumbling around trying to find it. Basically, poaching lawsuit. Let's just use that. Poaching lawsuit. Activision thought EA had poached. They settled it out of court. First question for you gentlemen. Who do you think balked? Because as far as I know, as of this recording, right now it's 6:29 Pacific. It's not been determined who was proven right and who was proven wrong. So, Glycinator, you first. Who do you think blinked? Activision, given that they tried to pay off the rest of the former Infinity Ward team, or EA? Who do you think blinked? Who do you think finally said, fine, we'll settle?
I'm going to go with Activision.
Ooh, I like that answer, and I'll tell you why here in a second. There's a reason we're going through this long run-up, because there's an actual somewhat valid and important question right at the end of it. John, who do you think blinked first, EA or Activision?
I think Activision did too. They paid the cash. They blinked.
Well, if this suit had gone to court and EA had lost, they would have been paid by EA. So I'm kind of thinking that if Activision blinked, other than paying maybe court costs and lawyers, they probably didn't pay EA much, because it was actually Activision suing EA. I'm sure EA was just happy to have it over with, for reasons we're going to get to in a second. This does not mean the West and Zampella court fight with Activision is over. Suit and countersuit, wrongful termination, breach of contract from the other side, toss, blah, blah. You don't care. I know. But the one with EA is over. Now, we get to, just for your information stuff, I don't really have a question for this. Activision IT boss was told to dig up dirt on ex-Infinity Ward bosses, and Bobby Kotick reportedly authorized monitoring of work email accounts and phones, which they were unable to do, and Microsoft and a couple other companies wouldn't help them because it was illegal. So, that dirt came out. Okay, I'm going to ask the question. It makes me a complete dick because I've been on this tangent all show. John, does this news potentially push Activision back in the lead for biggest dickheads in the world, or does EA got too far a head start?
Well, at least EA is at least EA is taking your money and telling you to your face when Activision is sneaking around trying to get, you know, digging up dirt. Not to say that EA is not, but I think it puts another notch in Activision's belt for biggest dick.
Yeah, I figure that somebody from EA will say something extremely stupid on Monday and just fucking knock it all out of whack again. Yeah. Going on my premise, the one I've been bitching about for the last 3 weeks, that all AAA developers, all of these big companies are pretty much assholes, and it's just EA's turn in the trendy barrel. Glycinator, they catch up with EA, or is EA still too far ahead in the largest dickhead of the world contest?
Oh, jeez. Who's king of the douchebags? There's just too many to count now. Follow by example, I guess.
Are you saying they're following EA's lead? Reversing the roles? You know, because everybody's accused EA of trying to copy Activision and everything they're doing, which again took another wild turn in a story we're not covering this week. Okay, so now we have all that out of the way. Quicker than I anticipated, which is good. Which brings us to the news that Respawn's game, which blurry 1960s Bigfoot footage-esque screenshots are the only things shown at this point. Their game's a no-show at E3. The studio will attend, but they have no announcement. Now, barring that they're lying out their ass, a la Valve, which is always possible, I have this question. John, you first. Do you think these guys are delaying so long because they want all these lawsuits and the potential, you know, the potential ramifications if they make anything new, if they're using anything that they might have took with them from Activision Infinity Ward?
That's a pretty good question, actually. It could be that, you know, let the smoke clear, let the dust settle, and before they, you know, potentially get into something else that might be messy. Yeah, it could be. I'm leaning more toward the, you know, it's just a big fat lie, and they actually do have something to show. But that's a cool angle.
Yeah, normally my questions are pretty run of the mill, but that one popped into my addled brain here yesterday. When you take all of that together, and I'm sure the audience when they listen to this will be bored to goddamn tears until we get to right this point. But when you add it all up, it kind of makes sense given the flurry of legal back and forth this week. And I think the Wes Zampella trial is due to go to court here really shortly, like maybe next week. Gleisdainer, what do you think? Do you think Respawn's wait until the legal dust clears, or are they liars? Or they just don't have anything? What do you think?
I have no idea.
You want to take a guess?
This is beyond me.
I don't blame you. I wish it was beyond me. Secondary to this, is Activision's capitulation with EA potential, and their attempt to pay the other former Infinity Ward employees, does this give any credence to the fact that maybe Black Ops borrowed a little too heavily from stuff Activision doesn't own fully? Glacinator, why don't you? You know, the rumor we had last week?
Oh, you mean the Victorian?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, the Victorian Horses one.
It's possible.
That also popped into my head. You know, they're being awfully quick all of a sudden, you know, as COD Black Ops 2 breaks every pre-order record known to man with this. What do you think, John? I hear you going,
Yeah, well, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, right?
Exactly. I think the determiner will be if before Wes Zampella goes to court, actual trial, and I'm not digging through all these news stories, audience, I'm sorry. There's a date in one of these somewhere that they're going. But my point is if there's some kind of settlement with those two, as pissed off as Kotek in the upper echelon of Activision is reported to have been at them taking off on them, I think then there's really was some serious issue. But it does kind of, it was, again, another interesting angle. And it's like, because the attempt to pay or the payment, although the rest of the former Infinity Ward guys are not dropping their lawsuit, and it was $42 million, about $1 million per person, was the offer that Activision made. And then the next day, last night, the announcement that they'd settled with EA, I went, wait a minute here. The timing, I believe in coincidences to a certain extent, but the timing of all of this is a little suspect, at least enough to discuss it. So
yeah, definitely, it's not a lot of money to throw around all in one shot over, you know. I mean, it's got to be something going on there.
Well,
it's like one huge soap opera.
I know it took like a 2-year break because
somebody needs to do a dramatization of this.
Well, like, it
with
took
real
a 2-year
with real
break.
Actors. I would watch that.
Let's make Will Ferrell Bobby Kotick. That's probably not the only way I'd watch him. I'm not a big fan of Ferrell, but I'd watch that. Him playing a jackass. That's the problem. Do they not send these CEOs, COOs, CFOs to like speaking school? All of them say some of the dumbest shit. I mean, like developers and studio guys, okay, I understand getting a little arrogant and braggadocious at times. But it's just some of this shit. It's like, really? You don't think anybody's going to pick up on this and use it as a hammer against you? Learn from Sony. But so there you have it. That's kind of the Respawn Infinity Ward Activision EA update. God help us all. Hopefully we don't have to do another one for another 2 years. I'm sure I'll at least mention it for those of you that don't like the lawsuit legal stories. I'm sure I'll at least mention it once the West Zampella thing gets worked out. If that gets settled soon, though, I'm leaning towards maybe at Black Ops 2 was in danger of having issues. Although now I want somebody to make me a first-person shooter in the Revolutionary War. Just to listen to people bitch about how long it takes to reload a musket. I don't think anybody'd play it, which kind of sucks. So, there you have it. I'll give you some ways you can contact us if you want to talk to us about either of those two news topics we did, or the Audio Master G question, or our discussion topic. First and best way is Facebook. Yes, we have a Facebook. It's WonderPod Online. All one word. Just search it on Facebook. Our man, Pat, usually accepts your friend requests unless you're an absolute positive spam bot. We have a website where we write and talk about a lot of this stuff, as well as wrestling and comic books and anything you can think of, comics. That's WonderPodOnline.com. That's right, WonderPodOnline.com. We like to keep it all pretty easy for you to remember. We have a YouTube channel, same thing, WonderPod Online. Or you can check out 36Wii's YouTube channel. He's got a lot of cool videos in there, including Paper Baby, which still gives me nightmares. You can pick up the show that you're listening to on iTunes. Yep, that's right, iTunes. Give us a rating. We don't care if you hate us, love us, just like some ratings. We're kind of whores like that. If you don't like iTunes, which I've heard some people don't, you can also pick up the show at archive.org, or I do use an embedded player on the actual posting page. I'm always dropping links for the show and the posts on the Facebook. If I don't, Pat does. And if none of that works for you, if you like the electronic equivalent to a chisel and stone, we got an email address. It's wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at WonderPod Online, or you can follow me on Twitter at ORIGIM, or you can follow John on Twitter
at John Keogh, JONKEHOE.
Until episode, what the hell, 111, I am Bruce McGee. I'm off to pet a bull. See you, people.
Cheers, everyone.
Goodbye.
Woohoo! Two shows in a row. No screw ups.